Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is that time, everybody, every single week here with the one, the only, Paul Moyer. You know him, you love him. He's with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, and the beauty is he'll be here at the same time every week, except for today. We've got a Mariner game going on, so things have been switched up a little bit, but typically at 3 o'clock on Thursdays is where you're going to find Paul Moyer with us. Hello, Paul.
Hello there. Yeah, I can't believe you bumped me for the Mariner game.
They demanded it. They demanded it.
Those contracts, I tell you.
They said Paul Moyer. Actually, no way.
It was. Hopefully, it was at least a close runner up there. So.
Well, it was kind of a rough day for your guy Marco. You know Marco, right?
Yeah. He had that one rough inning there. So.
Yeah, I think he threw almost 40 pitches in the third inning and gave up four runs in that. It's a rough start the first two for him.
Well, Marco's that guy that he's got to be spot on. And, you know, he talks about, you know, it's not just an exception for him, but, you know, it's, for him, it's all about mixing up the speeds and different pitches, but it's all about location for him. If he's off just a little bit in this league, you know, you can have some rough starts. He'll figure it out. He always does. He's a gamer. Not worried about him, but he's the one guy that you are kind of counting on, especially with Paxton's injury now. And there is excitement. I mean, it's, you know, I'm getting into the Mariners right now. I'm excited when they get on the radio to listen, and I think it's going to be a fun team. But they're definitely going to need their big time players to step up.
Well, and then there was I thought it was funny. It was a funny rookie mistake by Taylor Trammell today.
Oh.
He got caught. The pitcher wasn't even, I mean, he was still looking in, and he just took off running, and he gets picked off. So you're going to see the growing pains with the young guys there. So it's been fun to watch.
Well, it's fun to listen to, like, Trammell, you know, my son, who's a huge Mariner fan, even though he lives in Dallas now, but watch him all the time. And he's the guy he talks about all the time. He goes, man, he's good. I'm pulling for him. I know he struggled, you know, so far at the beginning of this year. But they do have the kind of guys that I think are going to pull, you know, people who are young, you know, mid-age and older people like myself. It's a team that we're going to be rooting for. I just hope they have success to keep everybody's attention throughout this year.
Yeah, Paul referring to himself as older people.
the elderly.
Magic 6-0 coming up, man. It's I don't have gray hair yet. That's the only good thing. But actually, I'm kind of looking forward for it to come in. But the age is coming. 60.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Wow.
But I know.
You don't look a day over 59.
Well, I appreciate that. My mom says like 57.
Okay.
But she was actually telling a story about you, Dave Wyme, because I'm down in California visiting.
She was my second mom when we played for the Seahawks.
Yes. Yeah. That's very nice of you. She said hello. But she remembers seeing you, and I don't know if it was after a game or at the practice facility, coming down the hall, and one of our nieces, you know, was there as well. And she goes, saw this really handsome man, and she thought it was me. And she goes, there's Uncle Paul. Go see him. And then you go, well, it's not. It's me, Dave. And she goes, oh, but you're so handsome, too.
Oh, look at that.
Well, the number of times that I was mistaken for Paul Moyer, you know, I thought it was a win for me.
It was a compliment.
Absolutely a win for me.
We still get it, don't we, Dave? I get it every time. Obviously not last year because we didn't have any fans, but whenever we're doing the pregame show for sure, and you know, in front of all the fans, I'm walking from our stage, you know, into the actual stadium, and I get hit with, Dave Wyman, you're the best. I just wave. I said thank you. I do look like a linebacker now.
Well, I've been a Paul Moore. I remember one time somebody said Paul Scansy, and I looked at him. I go, how big do you think receivers are? I'm like 250 pounds.
They meant Moyer. That's what they were trying to say.
Yeah. So speaking of football, Paul, I thought maybe one of the funnier things and one of the better suggestions as far as a rule, because, you know, there's all the proposals this year of changing things in the NFL, but you came up with the idea that the quarterback should be penalized for throwing a hospital ball to a wide receiver.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When it leads him into a big hit, they shouldn't necessarily punish the defender. It should be the quarterback. And, you know, and you see Russell, he'll throw behind a receiver every once in a while, and people say, oh, he's off target. Like, no, he was going to – it would have led him into a huge hit. So he does a good job with that. But any ideas, anything about the game that you think stands out to you that needs to be changed as far as rules go this year?
Well, this is going to – and I will – it does make me sound petty and that I hate the offense and everything. But I get really frustrated when – people make defenders out to be these villains now. Yeah. And, you know, the offense of people now are these very passive-aggressive people, you know, always pointing the finger, it's your fault. And particularly for me, it is the type of passes that they throw now. They have no fear. The quarterbacks, offensive coordinators, throwing a ball high across the middle when there's a safety or a linebacker right there. And the reason why is they expect the defender to get out of the way and protect the receiver. I have issues with that. And I do believe that they should make certain type of passes against certain defenses illegal. You know, if you really want to protect the game or protect the players, I don't want to say protect the game because I think it's made the game worse. But if you want to protect the players, I always say put some onus on the quarterbacks and coordinators and not always on the defenders. And will that ever happen? Not a chance.
Yeah.
Not a chance, because they love being able to push the ball downfield, and all the worst is it's a 15-yard penalty, and they, you know, they get to keep, you know, moving the chain. So, but I really believe that they're going to ever get to a point where, okay, we want to keep the offenses moving and scoring, and not constantly finding these defenders. I think they got to put something on the offensive guys.
What would you do to overtime? If they said, Paul, you get to change it how you see fit, make it fair is in your eyes, because we've heard different proposals, and we heard one last year. What was it? The 4th and 25 is what it would be, and you
it's
would
like
start
putting a second base runner on second base
in extra innings, which is gimmicky nonsense. But what would you do to overtime, or would you just leave it as is?
Well, I think it's tough because it's the only overtime in sports that it's not equal. You know, if you get the opening kickoff and you drive down, score a touchdown, you win. So the other offense doesn't get a chance. I like somewhat of the college rule and what they do. Maybe I'd modify it a little bit and bring it back farther. Maybe you start at the 40-yard line so you're not getting an automatic field goal. I also know, boy, that could extend a lot of plays. You know, I mean, now you're putting a lot of different plays on the players. But that, to me, is the only thing. You both have a chance. Maybe you start with a two-point conversion right from the get-go. Maybe you do something like we used to do, just put the ball on the 5-yard line, and, you know, you've got two plays to score if you really want to. But do something where it's actually truly equal. You both get the same chance. Mm. I don't think it's that big of an issue, though, Bob. I think the way it is now is fine. They've cleaned it up a little bit. The old one, the first one to score, definitely wasn't fair because a field goal could win it for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, force someone to get a touchdown. If they didn't, then, you know, next one to score went. I'm okay with it. There's not that many overtime games anyway. So, I'm not one of those guys who freaks out too much about the overtime.
But you like the runner on second base in extra innings?
No. That's such. I have to use high school. I get in trouble. That to me is such a high school little league thing to me.
It is.
I kind of get it. I'm not sure I'll ever completely feel great about that one. But, you know, maybe in 3 years, 4 years. I mean, I remember when the NBA, when they created the three-point line, you know, or the three-point circle for basketball. I mean, everybody thought that was kind of crazy, and now it's you can't even think of the game without it. So I think once somebody adopts something, you get used to it.
Well, maybe this isn't true. I just looked it up, but it says 53% of the teams winning the overtime coin toss win the game at some point in overtime. So, I mean, it's I don't know if that's...
That sounds about right, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shade over 50%. It's not a... Look, if it was 70% or 80%, I think they probably changed some of the rules on that. They're going to try and make it close to 50-50 if they can. So, you know, 53, yeah. I mean,
that's not bad.
There.
Yeah. Well, if this is accurate anyway.
It's got to be true.
It must be, yeah. I saw it on the internet, yeah. But
exactly.
Yeah. Paul... What do you think of Cody Barton? I get accused of being a Cody Barton lover, and they're people are saying you should ask him to prom and things like that to me. But
Dave and I are going to go on a double date with Cody Barton and Taylor Trammell.
Yeah, Bob loves Taylor Trammell.
I like Taylor Trammell.
But I mean, what you've seen from him, because he's been kind of a lightning rod where you'll see people criticizing him. He looks clunky. He looks slow. He looks this. And, you know, I love his physicality. I think he's really good in the run game, pass game, his rookie year. Could have had two picks in the Carolina game. I think he understands zone drops, things like that. But I guess the reason I'm asking that is because would you feel comfortable? I mean, you obviously would love KJ Wright back, but it's starting to look like it's probably not going to happen, which would put Cody out on the field.
Yeah, I got a couple things there. By the way, have you introduced Cody to Kendall yet, your daughter?
No.
I know how much you like Cody. So
yeah.
You're welcome for any time.
You know what? Get him into the family.
You know what, Paul?
Exactly.
I wouldn't do that to him.
The good thing is I know Kendall's not listening.
I know. She knows I love her. We just give each other a hard time. So So Cody, I'm seeing good things.
I like Cody. I don't think that position's probably going to be on the field that much if KJ's not here, unless somebody really just jumps out and he's now one of your truly top 11 players. I see anytime they have three wide receivers in the game, a tight end and a running back, which you get most of the time, it seems like, maybe not so much in NFC West, but I see Jamal. And you certainly have Jordan Brooks and Bobby. Those three are going to be your three linebackers, and you're either going to put another nickel or potentially safety in there as well. I don't have a problem with that package. I like that package. It allows, certainly Jamal to come off the edge. It's easier to disguise rather than him being a pure safety. Because once you're a pure safety and you drop down into that box, you can be accounted for. So I see that, but I don't have – Cody's a good player, particularly in the run game. He also has a good feel in the pass game. Is it a drop-off from where KJ's played the last 2 years? Probably. Doesn't mean for sure. We just haven't seen enough of him, right, Dave? I think once we do and then people find out, their strengths and weaknesses, it's not one game, it's not two games, it's that fourth, fifth, sixth game throughout the season is when you start making a name for yourself. So we'll see. But let me ask you this, Dave. I mean, with the way free agency is played out, do you really think KJ won't come back? I think there's so much is going to happen after June 1st, and that's a big day that starts freeing up more cap space for people if they restructure, if they trade, or if they cut veterans. So I think there's going to be a lot of guys out there, and I just don't think a guy like Bob, as much as I love KJ, and we all know we like KJ, I just don't think the huge dollars are there for him, unless he wants to go play for a team that knows him well, that it needs a veteran guy that they're just starting to make some noise, maybe not quite a playoff team, but maybe they feel like they got enough young guys to make a push for it. But I just don't think anybody's going to offer him a number that the Seahawks are going to go, we can work that in.
Yeah.
Because I just don't know if we have truly enough depth at linebacker. I'm okay with with Cody there. But what happens when Cody gets hurt?
Yeah.
Now you're starting to get into, I think, some really thin backups at that point.
Yeah. I've said I feel like if somebody like Dan Quinn in Dallas, Robert Saleh in New York, he's familiar with KJ, and like you said, bring a veteran guy in. We're gonna sign him to a year or 2 years, get this team going, set the culture and the tempo of what you want to be, because KJ couldn't be a better example of what you want as a football player and as a teammate and all that. But I just feel like, man, if it's like even a million or a couple million dollars, Is he going to, you know, pull up roots here in Seattle, go across the country just to play somewhere?
The Jets?
Yeah, for the Jets or, you know, be part of Jacksonville. I mean, that would surprise me.
I could see it, you know, if that made sense for Dallas to bring him in. He's from Texas. I mean, I get that, but this is his home now. I mean, this is where he is. So I would hope. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, we end up getting pretty much everybody back that we were hoping to, right? I mean, the Jerron Reed thing threw everybody off a little bit. But, I mean, we got Chris Carson back. I don't know if anybody thought we were going to get Chris Carson back when this whole free agency thing started.
Not really.
I mean, and then things started playing out, and then all of a sudden, you know, the price wasn't as much as we all thought, and I think it's going to be the same thing with KJ. At least I hope so. I really want him to finish his career here. I think he wants to finish it, and I know we're throwing away his $1 million or two, you know, which is always fun to play with Monopoly money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think he's probably got enough, and I hope his career ends up here.
Paul Moyer is our guest here with Wyman and Bob. He'll be with us every Thursday at 3 o'clock. Every Thursday at 3 is where you're going to find Paul, unless we get preempted by the Mariners like today, and you'll hear him at a different time. But, Paul, let me ask you about this secondary now, because I think one of the fallback plans went to Detroit, and that was Quentin Dunbar. Signs a one-year deal with the Lions. Dave and I differ on him. Dave liked him a lot more than I did. But I looked at him as, all right, he's a fallback. If they don't find somebody else, at least he's somewhat familiar, and maybe he has a better offseason. You see a better version of him. But that's no longer a debate because he's going to Detroit. So, A, do you think that's a miss by the Seahawks? Were you hoping they'd bring him back? And, B, who do you think that's out there would fit what they would like to do here? I mean, Richard's still out there, and we love to bring him up, and it's an interesting conversation. I'm not sure how realistic you believe that is.
Yeah, I think it's possible. Obviously, I wouldn't mind having Richard. I think, you know, he's a different person than he was a couple of years ago. And you're older, and you're wiser, and you're humbler, and all those things. So I think it could work out. If but again, I don't think anything's happened until after June 1st. Certainly after the draft. And once all that plays out, there's plenty of veteran corners out there that were good players. I just don't know if they can still play. I mean, that's where, you know, John Schneider and his group comes into play. We definitely need to get somebody else, unless they really feel good with some guys from the practice squad, which that's a big crapshoot there. So we're going to do something. The Dunbar one, I was disappointed because I really liked him coming out of when he was with the Washington football team. I really liked him. He was confident. I liked the way he played the game. He did not play that way last year. Partly is, you know, he missed a whole offseason, like everybody, but, you know, all the issues that he was going through. His injury definitely set him back. I think he lost some confidence. And I also think they just never – I think they thought the way it would transition for him, they were fine with him playing off and reading routes and everything. They brought him in knowing that was his strength. But he never got comfortable coming up to bump at all. And, you know, I just think at some point they may have said, okay, we've had him long enough. I don't know if it's going to get that much better than what we are hoping for. And certainly we're not going to pay the big dollars if he's not going to be the kind of player that we want. So you cut those losses, unfortunately, because I don't think he signed for a whole lot. So they must have thought, hey, you know, it may be a change of scenery. It didn't quite work out last year. And we think there's enough veteran guys out there that we can pick up for maybe even lower than that cost. So I'm not worried about it. And again, I think the action happens after the draft and after June 1st.
Where are you with Trey Flowers? Because, you know, I want to hear from him this offseason. I want to hear that he's, you know, whatever in the offseason, you know, dedicated himself to. I think he's an old school guy. I really like that about him. But he's been very up and down. I mean, at one point it was very promising. And then, you know, we've seen some things that weren't so good. I think Pete thought that he finished the season really well. But, you know, he's also been a pretty big question mark. What would you do with Trey, or where are you with him?
Yeah, he finished better. I don't know how positive I was on him. I think this is a big year for him. It's his third year now at playing corner, so there's no more excuses. There's no more, oh, you came from college, you were safety, you played corner. Now it's time to make that step. And I did think he played much better, towards the end of last year. I thought he was more comfortable being bump and, using the sideline and his height and all that stuff. I'd prefer to get someone else to really compete hard with him and see if we can, find another guy to compete for the third spot or second spot. That's still got to play out. I'm okay, though, with him coming back and competing at number two or three. I'm fine. I think he will make an improvement. But also, there's enough, Bob, you said it a few times, there's enough skepticism there from his play that maybe it doesn't. Third year, I'm hoping. I think it should be better. There's no reason it shouldn't. He has the skill and the speed and size to be pretty good. But they're going to bring someone in to compete for that third and fourth spot, that's for sure.
Hey, we heard from Carlos Dunlap, and he said he talked to Russell before he re-signed here and that Russell told him, hey, I'm going to be here. And I'm wondering, does that put your mind at ease? I think for some Seahawk fans, it made them feel better. Others are like, oh, that just means this year and what's going to happen after this year. Hearing him say that, does that have any impact for you?
Well, I think it has an impact that he's going to, well, obviously he's going to be here this year. And I think he's going to definitely be here next year as well. I think more of the conversation is that they don't restructure Russell Wilson's contract this year. That makes me have a little doubt in the years to come.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you restructure it, you are taking a second mortgage on your home, and you better be committed to that house. You better be sticking it with that house for a while. And so there, again, we're all speculating. I know nothing, that you all don't know. But I felt better that a player called him. There were actually some conversations behind the scene, and a veteran player that came out to say something. I wish Russell would come out and do it. I wish his PR team would do that. But, yeah, I feel a little bit better, at least the next 2 years. But, yeah, if this thing doesn't restructure, it definitely leaves the door open for some things to happen, a year or two down the road.
He is the one, the only Paul Stewart Moyer.
Oh,
how about that? He is 59, 256 days old, according to Pro Football Reference, as I look at it. You're still listed at 6'1", 201, Paul. How about that?
Well, let's see. I've had two back surgeries, so I'm probably not 6'1 anymore. And I know I'm not at 201. That is for sure.
Maybe if you took all your clothes off.
Alone, yeah. How many of us ever update our driver's license? When you get a new driver's license, do you tell the truth of what your current weight is? Or do you just maybe pad 10 pounds from the 5, 6 years ago? Bob, you're different. You don't count.
This will probably annoy you, Paul, but I actually try to round up because I've been trying to put on weight over the years. So if I'm like 207, I'll call it 210, or, I'll try to round up a couple pounds.
No, I'm not mad, but I am jealous. That's for darn
Yeah, I just hate Bob for that.
Paul, it's always great, man. We appreciate it. Have fun out there in California, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
All right, it's time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. We do it every day at 4 o'clock, but, when the Mariners play, times change. But he's still with us. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Good to have you with us, John. As far as the big news out there today, what's really caught your eye?
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of big stuff coming on, but again, what you're saying, because again, everybody not... there's so much is going on in Indianapolis because 150 prospects, went in there for medical double checks, which of course is much less than the 350, 360 that normally get checked in February. So they're trying to play a little bit of catch up there. Certainly, things have been slow in free agency because most of the deals have been minimum salary. And by the way, did you see the Quentin Dunbar contract?
No.
minimum salary. He
really?
He got a 990 base, 137.5 on the signing bonus, so he gets 11275. It counts 987.5 against the cap, and he goes to Detroit, a team that's going to be destined for doom this year.
Wow. And so the Seahawks couldn't come up with that.
Or didn't want to.
That's what I mean. He either didn't want to come back or they didn't want to sign him. And it makes you wonder, were they a little bit more concerned about the knee injury? Because that could be too, and they didn't want to take the chance. Because you know you can almost guarantee that there'll be a signing at cornerback, and it's going to be minimum salary. You know, I don't know if that's going to be Rashard Breeland, Casey Hayward. You know, Steve Nelson could be a candidate who was cut by the Pittsburgh Steelers. So there are guys out there that could at least be available. But in the end, you kind of wonder, Dunbar getting the minimum salary. And, of course, the one thing that was kind of interesting in the last 24 hours, just about all the contracts that have involved Seahawks have all come out. Like, for example, remember how we talked about where the reporters were out there saying that it was a Al Woods got 1 year, $3 million?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? He got 1 year, 2.5.
Okay.
And then, of course, remember how it was with Kerry Hyder? Kerry Hyder, they said initially 3 years, $16.5 million. Well, it turned out to be 2 years at $6.5 million. Hmm. And so that's $2 million a year less.
Is that a voidable year on the end of that?
Well, there, if I remember right, I think there might be some voids, but you know, but again, it's a two-year contract, so you can still get a compensatory pick if he leaves. But yeah, 2 years, 6.5, and then you know, and everybody was reporting initially there was going to be $8.8 million on Carlos Dunlap, and it turns out to be you know $6.8 million, not 8.8. So again, that's one. The numbers come out, and everybody says, wow, look what they paid him. It's like, just calm down for a couple of days. So the numbers really come out.
Yeah. Hey, John, you mentioned something about Indianapolis. Tell us about that. I wasn't aware of that. So instead of a combine, they're still doing, did you say physicals?
No, what they do each year is that you go to Indianapolis, and the most important thing, even more than the running, is basically getting physicals, right? Because that's why Indy's such a good place, because everything is close. Everything is there. They've been doing it for decades. And so it's like, it's such a nice fit. All right. But there was no Indy combine this year. And so normally at this time, couple weeks before the draft, they have guys come back for double checks, you know, guys that had surgery. And you know, like, remember when John Ross had his injury? I mean, he had to go back for a double check. You know, they wanted Trevor Lawrence to go back, but you know, he didn't go back, you know, coming off his surgery. But in the end, so 150. But again, normally you're going to have physicals on 360 players at the combine. So this year you're only having 150. All the others are going to be reliant on, you know, the team doctors for colleges to give you a report. And so you may not be able to get the most accurate information, because again, there's more detail, because what happens when you go to Indy, and Dave, you know this, it's like, hey, if they want to give you six MRIs on six different areas, they can do it.
Yeah.
And you know, because you have 32 team doctors saying, hey, let's check this out. I didn't know about this history. Let's check this out. And so, you know, now it's a matter of kind of a rush job with 150 going through.
Well, this is me making an excuse, but yeah, one of the things that happened, one of the reasons why I didn't run a good 40, every doctor in the league yanked on my knee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
a little sore.
Another interesting occurrence was I went to check into my room, and I opened it, the key, and sitting on the bed, and it was just one bed in the room, was Bruce Armstrong.
Ooh.
Remember Bruce?
Oh, yeah.
And he was half naked, and he looks up at me like, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. I was like, I think there's been a mistake.
Yeah.
You remember that guy? He's one of the all-time best. I think he ended up being the 23rd pick in the draft that year. But, yeah, so that's still going on. That's good. I mean, that, you know, because I talk about it being more of a crapshoot than ever. You're just not able to be around these guys. And what about the interviews? I mean, they're doing them over Zoom, John.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's still just so much better to be there in person. Like, you know, the thing with DK Metcalf, where he takes his shirt off and everything. You just don't get those kinds of moments.
No, exactly. And that's why it's going to be a tougher draft. And then, you know, when you really look at it, I was counting them up yesterday when I was starting to do my, I'm right now in the process of doing my third mock draft. I'll do that for the Washington Post on Monday. But it's like, you know, there's like eight first rounders that were opt-outs. About eight, and it could be nine, depending on how the lower part of the first round goes. But that includes the two best offensive tackles. You know, Penei Sewell missed the season. He opted out. And then the next best guy, he opted out. And, you know, the top receiver, Lamar Chase, he opted out. So you have all these guys. I mean, there's probably going to be four or five in the top 12 or 13 that didn't play football last year.
Wow. So based on all of that, do you think there's a chance the Seahawks do just go with three picks, being as it's very uncertain, you can't evaluate the way you normally would, and we all assume they're going to make trades and accumulate more picks, which I still believe, but I guess if there were a year where John might be content to say, nah, we're good with what we've got, this might be it.
Well, the one switch in all this is that next year's draft is going to be much more valuable, right? And so what you're going to have is that you're going to have teams, particularly when you get to the fourth round, fifth round, and at certain positions like defensive tackle, maybe safety, certainly maybe tight end, you're going to have guys that you're in the fifth round and you're looking at those positions, and they're going to have undraftable grades because, again, it's such a short year coming out from college, and, of course, it's such a short year on defense. I mean, to a point where, you may have 17 or 8. Well, no, you may have 20, 22 guys go in the first round on offense and only 13 guys or so go on defense. I mean, it's remarkable. Like, for example, when I've done some of these, I had four edge rushers going in the first round. I had one defensive tackle. I had one safety, and that was at the very bottom of the round because I felt sorry that the best safety in the draft wasn't going to be in there. Then you had maybe three linebackers, four or five cornerbacks. I mean, it's just brutal.
Boy, the Patriots, John, I'm looking at their 2021 draft choices. I mean, they did a ton of moves in free agency. They have number 15 in the first round, number 15 in the second round. They've got a total of 9.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, 10.
10, yeah.
10 draft choices. I mean, this...
that's a lot of that's because we've got compensatory picks.
Yeah.
I know they have two third-round compensatory picks and I think a fourth-round compensatory pick. And the weird part is...
They do,
They picked up a fourth-round compensatory pick for Cal Van Oy, who got over $11 million a year to go to Miami. And then Miami cuts Van Oy. And guess where he goes back to? New England. So they get the compensatory pick and Van Oy.
Yeah, amazing. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch. You know, we talked about Brady winning the divorce over Bill Belichick, but, I mean, in a couple of years, well, and maybe even right away, just depending on quarterback for them. You know, a quarterback is a huge deal, but, I mean, you look over the next couple of years, this should be a good team. If he's able to develop all these guys and make some good draft choices, I'd say watch out for New England.
Yeah, but also he hasn't drafted well. I mean, because you have to go back and the last Pro Bowl player that he took on the Patriots in the draft was Jamie Collins, and that was like 2013. He's been horrible at wide receiver. I know that with Nick Caserio gone, they've changed the way that they're scouting, changed the way that they're doing things, and even Bob Kraft 2 weeks ago said that we haven't drafted really well, so it's like it's one where they've got to pick it up because these drafts are important. It's nice to be able to have the free agency room this year to load up the team and do the best they can, but because at least as bad as they were at tight end, because remember they drafted two tight ends in the third round last year, two, and what did they do this year? They brought in two tight ends being paid $12.5 million a year. So what's that say about those tight ends? Not much. I mean, really, the best tight end that they've had in the last, say, 3 years is Jacob Hollister.
Hey, John, good stuff. We will we'll talk tomorrow at our normal time.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
All right, good to talk football with Clayton there because it just delayed the inevitable, Dave. We've got to address what happened today. We touched on it with Moyer. It was a rough day for Marco, but 10-2 the final for those that missed it. The Minnesota Twins beat the daylights out of the Mariners. And... again, I know we keep leaning on this. I think that's just how the season's going to go. It's going to be they put up 8 runs one game, and then they put up 2 here. And I guess the more concerning part, and I'm not really that concerned yet. It's 2 starts. But, Marco, we brought this up. 7 earned runs and 4 1/3 today.
Yeah.
And he's the one guy, as we sat here and broke down different position groups and what do you feel good about, where are the question marks. We talked about the rotation and said, well, outside of Marco, that you could attach a question mark to everybody for a different reason, whether it's experience, whether it's injuries with Paxton, whether Kikuchi, could he find all these different people, except for Marco. We're good there.
Yeah.
And he's had two really, I mean, he only walked, what was it, 11? I think he had 11 walks or seven walks.
It was seven walks last year.
Seven total.
All year. Well, I mean, it was
still
60 games, but
yeah,
but still.
Yeah, and he's going to surpass that maybe in his next start. I mean,
yeah.
7 runs, 9 hits, 2 walks, threw 100 pitches in 4 1/3. Just very un-Marco-like in the first two starts.
I'm with you on I'm not concerned, deeply concerned. I'll be nitpicky here, though. These are today, Mitch Haniger kind of fumbled one out in right field that maybe he could have gotten a guy at second. You saw Kyle Seager the other day when they got blown out, make an error. And then Mark, I mean, those are the three veterans. Those are the three guys. And then, you know, the other very concerning thing is that, you know, we talked about Paxton's health coming into the season. And so it's just unexpected. The part that's not unexpected is Taylor Trammell getting picked off today.
Yeah.
And then later on in the game, he just looked like such a rookie. And I just would say this, God bless him. He just keep doing what you're doing, Taylor. He's a good guy. He'll be fine. But remember at the end of the game, there was a called, ball,
mm-hmm.
take your base. And he was turning around, looking at the umpire.
I like, wasn't sure.
He just looked like such a rookie. And I'm not saying that in a mean way. But, you know, him getting picked off, I have no idea what he was thinking there.
Well, usually I'll put that on the first base coach as much as him. I mean, you got to know your personnel. You got to know who's standing there. And, all right, hey, when he gets into his windup, here's what you want. You get your secondary lead. You got to be talking to this guy. So I'm going to put that on Perry Hill almost as much as I'll put it on Trammell. But ultimately, he's responsible for his own actions. But you figure Perry's going to be there sort of, hey, hang here.
Yeah.
When he gets into a stretch, I want to get that secondary lead. You're supposed to be talking to him. Get back.
Maybe not such a big lead,
yeah.
You know, for a guy that's not sure, a rookie. But, yeah, that's what we saw out there. The good news, the trade. Austin Nola, Austin Adams, and Dan Altavilla for Torrens, Ty France, Taylor Trammell. We'll see with Andres Munoz. I think he had Tommy John surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But Torrens, 333. Ty France, 346. Looking really good. Torrens had that really crucial block that helped them win that first game against the Giants, a ball in the dirt, and then hit a home run today. You know, same thing with Ty France, just tearing the ball off. I'm sorry, he didn't hit a home run today. He had a hit and an RBI, but
yeah,
he had a double, and so yeah, I mean that trade's starting to look really good. And these young guys coming up, but Ty France and Torrens, two guys, and then Marmolejos, not too bad. He get a home run today, and you know he's filling in at first base. And the Evan White deal doesn't seem as bad if he's going to hit like that. So, you know, there's some encouraging things. But yeah, this was kind of what I keep going back to what you said before the season started. There's going to be some games where they look great, and it's like, oh man, these guys are coming around. And then there's going to be times where they look really young.
Yeah. Yeah,
and this was it.
And we're seeing it with some of the hitters. I mean, the lineup's pretty uneven. You've got kind of a dead spot in the last two spots. Haggerty's still looking for his first base hit of the season, even though he's not a starter. And J.P. Crawford, he had a three-game hitting streak. He goes 0-for-4 in this one. You really like to see him pick up that a bit. And Dylan Moore, same thing. You want to see these guys hit. So you've got some uneven spots. Taylor Trammell, I'd probably drop him down a little bit lower. He's hitting 105 right now. He's getting on base. He's got a 320 on base percentage, had two walks today, but a lot of swing and miss with him. I think he's got 13 or 14 strikeouts so far on the season, which is a lot of swing and miss. So I might bump him down in the lineup a bit. But you brought up Paxton, and we haven't had a chance to address this, but the initial evaluation on his arm is a recommendation of Tommy John surgery. And I know he's going to get a second opinion, but, I mean, how often does rehab work? When you see guys in any sport, I feel like, when you hear somebody, they suffer an injury, whether it's an elbow, a knee, whatever the sport is, and they get an initial diagnosis for surgery, then they get the second opinion that often will be, hey, rest, rehab. I don't know how often that works. I feel like they do that, and all it does is delay the inevitable, which becomes surgery. And I don't know how severe this is. We don't know. I'm not a doctor. But I just feel like in the history of sports and hearing guys that are – initially recommended surgery. They look for that second opinion that gives them what they want to hear. Hey, you just rest. We're going to rehab this. You'll be fine. How often are they fine?
Yeah. I would say this, though. The really good doctors will, and I go to Ed Calfain, who is the Seahawk doctor. The really good ones will make surgery a last resort.
Right.
And so,
as it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, but it just, it's so discouraging for him. I mean, you know, good success with Tommy John surgery. Has he had other surgeries?
He had back surgery. He's had a few surgeries, and he's been riddled with injuries. He's 32. I mean, financially, he doesn't need to play again. I don't know where he's at mentally. If he's like, okay, I'm in for this grind. It's going to be a battle. I'm going to have to battle my way back. I'm not going to pitch for a year. So he come back hopefully at this time next year. Where's he going to be? You know, if he were 27, maybe it's a different conversation. I wonder if he's contemplating, you know what?
Yeah.
I've made great money. He makes $8.5 million this year.
Right.
So financially, he doesn't need to play anymore. I'm just wondering where that desire is to go through this again for somebody, and you can relate to this, for somebody that's gone through surgery after rehab, after rehab, after missing games. Does your desire wane at some point? Or you're like, man, I just don't know if I've got it in me to do this anymore.
You know, I keep bringing it back. I'm basically an expert. I would only call myself an expert on one thing, and that's having surgery. My 8th year going in, I think I told this story, but, you know, 3 days before the opener, I blow my knee out. I get surgery. I rehab it. I come back in like week 11, play a couple of games. The second game, I get my knee blown out again. And so I remember sitting in the airport in San Francisco, and it was because I was running down the seam with a tight end in cover two. Dennis Smith came over, knocked himself unconscious on my right knee, blew it out. And I remember sitting next to Elway, and he's like, are you all right? And I go, I just don't think I can go through this again. I did. I ended up having another 4 surgeries playing my last year.
And so that's emotion speaking at that time. It's fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just because you know what's in front of you. You know that you're going to not only have to get the surgery, which that was the easy part. You know, they pump you full of drugs, knock you out, and do the surgery. But then it's the rehabilitation. It's going up and down stairs, you know, on crutches. For him, it's going to be not using his arm for, you know, who knows how many weeks or months or whatever. It's just it's daunting. So we'll see. You mentioned he's 32 years old. I hope so. I hope he does. And I hope he just, I mean, I would always tell young guys, I mean, as long as you're young. And by the way, happy birthday to Cliff Averill.
The great today. Cliff Averill, 35 years old.
Yeah, I sent him a text and on our behalf, wished him happy birthday and told him that I would kill to be 35. So, but yeah, it's once you get out of the league, I mean, there's just no getting back in. And, you know, if you're still, you're relatively a young man at 32, and that's the thing, you could start a whole nother career in your mid to late 30s. And I went into the financial, I was a financial advisor and did that for 6 years. But, you know, you're still very young when you come out of the league. And, he'll realize that. I mean, he's old baseball-wise.
Yeah, he'll be 33 if he gets Tommy John. He'll be 33 when he's able to pitch again.
Yeah, and so I hope he does. But I feel bad for him. He's probably going through that phase right now where you're feeling sorry for yourself, and you know, hopefully he'll go through the whole process of grieving and getting past it. And you know, they have such high success with the Tommy John surgery. But yeah, I mean, that's what I think is where it went, that the good doctors, like I said, it's a last resort to do surgery. I mean, there's all kinds of complications, risks, things that can go along with that, but it does have a very high success rate.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens after the second opinion. James Paxton will get a second opinion on it and see where he goes from there. But I don't know. Maybe I'm being a cynic. I don't expect to see him again this season. We'll see what happens. I hope to be wrong on that one as well. All right, that does it for us today. Short show once again due to Mariners. We're back with a full show tomorrow. I want to thank our guests today, Paul Moyer and John Clayton, for joining us on the program. Again, if you miss anything, head to 710sports.com and click that podcast tab. Click on our picture, and it's right there waiting for you each and every day. Back with a full show, regular time, back at 2 p.m. tomorrow with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.